Sure. My name is Les Bakke, B-A-K-K-E.
And Les, where were you born?
I was born in northern Minnesota, a small town of New Folden. It's about 17, 18 miles northwest of Thiefer Falls, Minnesota, Marshall County.
Okay. How big a town?
We had give or take 300 people in the town most of the time. Every time somebody was born, somebody left. So
evened out, huh?
It evened itself out.
Did you go to school there?
I went to school at then New Folden High School. It's now Marshall County Central High School. It merged, as lots of schools did, in the 80s, I think, is when they merged.
Now, who are your parents?
My parents, my dad's name is Adolf Bakke. His parents immigrated from Norway back in the 1880s, 1886. They came from a little town called Favang, Norway, which is about 60, 70 miles north of Lillehammer. And my mother's parents came from Germany about the same time. I think they came a little later, a year or two later, but they were all back in the mid-1880s they came to this country.
And what was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Gast, G-A-S-T.
What did your father and mother do for a living?
He was a farmer. He was a typical farmer up in the northern part of Minnesota, where, you know, he had small grain, he had corn, he had hay, he had sheep, he had pigs, he had chickens, he had cows, he had horses, and everything else. So I got my share of milking done, and plowing, and shocking, and stacking hay, and all the other good things.
Okay. Did you go to high school in New Folden, too?
Yes, yes. All 12 years I went to. We didn't have kindergarten, of course. I went all 12 years there. Graduated in 1963.
And after high school, did you go right on to college?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I went to a year's worth of college at then Moorhead State College, right down here in Moorhead. I arrived as a history major. I wanted to be a history teacher in high school when I got done with college. However, when I got here, they were giving all the new freshmen math tests for placement into various math courses. We're doing that again here now, but back then they were doing it. And I was one of two students that evidently passed the math test, so they put me in calculus as a brand new freshman from a little town in New Folden. 300, we had 37 in our graduating class. I didn't know any better, so there I was sitting in a class with all sorts of sophomores. And at the end of the second quarter, when I was finishing the second quarter of calculus, I decided, hey, maybe they know more than I do, so I changed, became a math major. But I finished the year's worth of college and decided in June, I guess it was, that I didn't have enough money, and a variety of other reasons, I decided to enlist in the Air Force.
So where did you go for basic training?
Basic training, we went to Lackland Air Force Base, which is located in San Antonio, Texas. We left here on the 23rd of July of 64. Flew out of Fargo, flew down to Dallas, and then... if I remember right, we transferred planes in Dallas and flew to San Antonio. They picked us up there with a bus, took us to the base, and of course at the base, you've heard some of these stories before, but they take you in and shave your hair off and do this and do that and run you ragged. And about 1 o'clock, they sent us to the barracks so we could sleep. And at 5 o'clock, they wake us up again and start all over. So I do remember thinking, before I went to sleep that first night, and, you know, what the heck did I do to myself? But then the second thought immediately following was, hey, there have been hundreds of thousands of other people that have gone through this or worse. Mm-hmm. They're no better than I am. I can do it, too.
How long was basic training back then?
Basic training, if I remember right, was about 10 weeks long, just about 2 months. And, of course, I was smart enough to listen in the middle of July, go to Texas in the middle of July. Yes, it was hot. But the fact that I'd participated in athletics in high school and other things and worked all my young life outside on the farm, whatever, I was in reasonably good shape. And the heat then didn't bother me. The exercise didn't bother me. Some of the city kids, of course, it bothered them. Mm. Most of the farm boys, heck, we're used to it.
Tough.
Not necessarily tough, just used to it. Yeah. It was more manual labor farming in the 60s.
Any special memories stick out from boot camp?
Basic training. Basic training is what the Air Force calls it, of course, not boot camp. But nothing in particular. The one thing that was interesting before I left Fargo, there was a sergeant with the Air Force who came into the group of people who were going into the military and said, "Who's the guy here going into the Air Force?" And I said, "Well, I am." "Come with me," he said. So we went to his office. He said, "You're the only one going in the Air Force. There's no need for you to sit there with all the draftees and stuff like that. And you can come in here while we're waiting to ship you out, and we can talk." The best thing that he ever did, he told me about something called a Defense Language Institute language program that when I got down to Lackland and was in basic training, they'd give us an exam test to see how adaptable we were to learning foreign languages. And he said, "If you can get into that program, they'll send you to college for a year." I said, "Cool, that's good." I was going to go into electronics, you know, mathematics, electronics, they were all pretty much the same. So I knew about this language program. We got there, and sure enough, all of the people that had a year's worth of college were given the language aptitude test. And I tried really hard, and apparently I passed it, because when I left basic training, my orders were to go to language school at University of Indiana in Bloomington, Indiana. So I hopped a train. No, I paid for a ticket. Got on a train out of Texas and went first to New Orleans. And I spent a couple of days in New Orleans on the way to Bloomington, Indiana. So I got to see that part of the country, and then I arrived at Bloomington, Indiana. And there was another sort of shock awaiting at the Language Institute in Bloomington, because all of our instructors were native Russians who spoke very, very, very little English. Our instruction was in Russian, of the Russian language. So we walked in the first day of class, and they say "Здравствуйте" and other Russian words, and we're sitting there saying, "Uh-oh." But it was a great experience. Really a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
How long was the language?
I was there for 10 months. It was a 10-month program. They immersed us in Russian. We were in class 6 hours a day. If we didn't have 80% or better on the exams, we had 2 hours of required study all every night. So it was a full-time job. Even with without the required study hall, you'd spend 8-10 hours learning the Russian language. So we learned it pretty well. The best part about it, of course, is we were in the military, so we were on payroll. We got paid every month, okay? Room board paid for by the federal taxpayers. And we were on a college campus. And I still believe there's no better place in the world than sitting on a college campus. Because, you know, single young men, there were a lot of single young women around. And any other military institution, any other training that one would go to, that wouldn't be the case. Mm-hmm. So it was a great, great base to be stationed. Mm-hmm. And we got to figure out what we're doing. I was in the Russian program, so we all figured out that we would be listening to Russian broadcasts and analyzing and reporting and so forth and so on, because no one told us that it was true, no one told us it was false. When we finished our language program, we went down to a base in San Angelo, Texas, Goodfellow Air Force Base. And there we went through an intelligence program. And the first thing they told us in the intelligence program is that you cannot tell anyone what you are doing down here. Of course, we'd been telling people for the last 10 months that we're going to be Russian spies and everything else, and they asked us how the Russian spy business is going, and we said, we can't talk about it. But it was really true. They were very, very, very security conscious at Good Hall. And I went through the Russian intercept course down there, where we learned the military part of the Russian language and what we had to listen for and everything else. And when we finished that program, there was an opportunity to get training in military intelligence. So I went to that program. So I was in school almost 2 years before I went to work. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
So after the training in San Angelo, where did you get orders to?
Oh, that's a really interesting little story. One of the things that happened down in San Angelo at Goodfellow is I found this program called the Airman's Education and Commissioning Program. If you had at least a year's worth of college, and by then I had two, the one in Indiana and the one in Moorhead, and if you had at least a year's worth of college, you could apply for this program where the Air Force would send you to college, finish your degree, send you to officer candidate school, become an officer, and at the end of that, you had to sign up for an additional 4 years. Well, the good things about it were, of course, that I got to go to school. They'd pay me to go to school. They'd pay tuition, room, board, books, everything. So I said, shoot, that's a good deal. So I applied for it, and I got into the program, or I was approved to go into the program. The only restriction was you had to apply from a permanent duty station. You couldn't apply from a training institution. Goodfellow was a training school. So when we got our dream sheets are those things where you fill out where you want to go to serve your active duty. And part of the rules of this program, the commissioning program, was that you had to serve half of your permanent duty station months. So I picked all the shortest months in the world. There were some duty stations that were 12 months long, so I picked all of them. Such exotic places as Trabzon, Turkey, and Shimea, Alaska, and someplace in Pakistan, and everything else. And I sent those in. Other people were applying for Germany, Italy, England, you know, the nice places. Well, when we got our orders, most of the people got Okinawa, the Philippines. A couple got Vietnam at that time. This was in 1966, so Vietnam was pretty strong. I got orders to Hickam Field, Hawaii. 36 months.
Tough job.
Yeah, stateside, you know. You didn't even have to have shots to go to Hickam Field, Hawaii. So I went home on leave. I said, well, you know, this isn't what I really wanted. I have to wait a year and a half to go into this program from Hickam. But I guess I could take Hawaii for a year and a half. And then about a week before I was due to fly over there, I got a telegram in the mail, and I still have the telegram at home. The orders have been changed from Hickam Field, Hawaii to Misawa, Japan. Well, I didn't care for that a whole bunch. But it was only 2 years long, and I said, that's no problem. I can serve a year anywhere. I got out to Travis Air Force Base to fly over to Japan. And, of course, I didn't have any shots because I was going to Hawaii. You don't need shots to go to Hawaii. So I had three in the left arm and two in the right arm all at the same time. And, yeah, I got sort of ill. And then we got on a plane and flew up to Anchorage and then over to Tokyo and then on up north to Misawa. Got off the plane in Misawa, and it smelled like fish. And
ooh.
I was not the happiest young man about the whole chain of events. So a week or so later, I got a call from the education officer over there to come in and fill out the paperwork for the commissioning program and everything else. And I went over and I said, forget it. Don't want to stay in the Air Force any longer than my remaining 2 years. Why not? Do you know what you're throwing away? I said, no, I'm not throwing it away. I want a little control over my life. I don't want somebody else selling me a telegram and saying, your next 12 months are going to be here, not there. And it just wasn't for me. So I served my 4 years, actually 3 years, 11 months, 3 weeks and a day. But nobody counted.
So it was basically in Japan then?
I served in Misawa, Japan. And actually, I really did enjoy it. I enjoyed being over there. I worked as a intelligence analyst for most of the time. I did a little bit of Russian intercept language and transcriptions and those kinds of things, but it was mostly analyzing the traffic that we copied. We copied voice traffic. We copied Morse code traffic and other kinds of military communications from the then Soviet Union. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. The job was wonderful. Serving in the military was okay. But, I got to see Japan, traveled the northern part of Japan all over, went skiing, mm-hmm. went up to the northern island. I did some volunteer English teaching in a junior high over there, and I really had a good time. Got to be pretty good at ping pong, table tennis, and that's a sport the Japanese really loved, uh-huh. or they did back then. And these little kids at the junior high would just line up at noon hour to play the American at ping pong. And they had a great time. So some of them were really, really good. And some good battles on it. Mm-hmm. And then they'd want me to play basketball with them. Of course, I'm not that tall, but I was about a foot taller than any of them. Uh-huh. And they had the rim down low, so I could almost dunk the ball. And had a good time. Bought a motorcycle while I was over there, so I could get around the countryside.
Okay.
Those kinds of things.
No doubt it had to have been a better tour of duty than what most people were doing at that time, going to Vietnam.
It was a far better duty than Vietnam. That is true. I did, however, about halfway through my 2 years in Japan, volunteer to go to Nam. They had openings for intelligence analysts on there. There's still times I kind of wish I'd gone.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds strange to most people. You want to volunteer to go to a war zone, but
mm-hmm.
you got to remember that I was not a frontline infantryman. I was I'd have been stationed in Seoul or some other relatively safe location in Vietnam. I would not have been out in the firefights or anything like that. But even so, it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been dangerous, I guess. They gave you extra pay to go, you know.
But they elected to keep you in Japan.
I think my NCO, the guy I worked for, and I do not remember his name, he was really one of the best people I ever met in the military. And something to say, this guy thinks he wants to go, but nah, I don't think he wants to go. Just one of those things that young men do.
Uh-huh. So your time in Japan, did you have a lot of regular colleagues you worked with, or were you basically on your own?
Oh, no. We worked we were on duty 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. We worked in three shifts, a day shift, a swing shift, and a mid shift. There must have been 100 people or more on each shift. Probably about 120. I think there was near 400 stationed in the little wing that we were in. We were in the security wing, which was on the base at Misawa, Japan, but it was quite a ways away from everything else. We had big antennas there so we could capture Russian broadcasts and so forth. And we were a 24-hour-day operation every day of the year. The main base, the other part of the base, was not. They were, more of a normal operation during the day, and for the most part, they shut down at night.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to go through the main base to get to the city of Misawa, where all the bars were and all the other places of entertainment. That's all we have to say about that. we had to go through the main base to get there. When I was over there in 1967 when the USS Pueblo was captured, the Navy spy ship that was captured by the North Koreans. And it was picked up in, there's still a lot of debate whether it was international waters or Russian, or not Russian, but Korean territorial waters, whether the boat was captured or not. But it was close.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been on one side, it may have been on the other side. It was really, really close. Anyhow, I was over there when that boat was captured. And, of course, the main base went on full alert, which means that the folks on the main base could not go off base. Well, we in the security wing were 24 hours. Anyhow, it didn't really matter. So we could go off base. So we could go on the bus through the entire main base, out through the gates, go to the bar, have a drink or more, and come back in. And it just got the people on the main base very, very upset. Because, what do you think you are? We can't go down there. How come you can? Those kinds of things.
Interesting. Did you talk to any of the people you worked with?
Oh, I had some good friends. Actually, the friends that I... my best friends were those that I met in language school and went on down to Texas with me. But I haven't communicated with them in many, many, many years. Very good friend, Bill Quirin, was from a little town just outside of Cleveland, Ohio. And we were stationed in Bloomington, Indiana. So one long weekend, we hitchhiked from Bloomington up to Cleveland, stayed at his parents' house, and went goofing around Cleveland and the area.
Mm-hmm.
First time I'd ever been to a real amusement park. They had one just outside Cleveland. It was kind of fun.
What did you do after you left the military?
Well, actually, when I was ready to leave Japan, it was in April, if I remember right, and I was due to get out in July. And normally, if you're within 3 months of discharge, they just discharge you when your tour is done. Well, for some reason or another, they decided they weren't doing that anymore. I didn't particularly want to stay in Japan any longer, and so I extended for 3 months, which meant that I had 6 months left. And if you had 6 months left, they send you another duty site. And this whole thing doesn't make any sense at all because it was so cost ineffective, it's unbelievable. But I extended for 3 months. And I got orders to go to Fort Meade, Maryland, which is located between Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and that's the head of the National Security Agency. And a lot of people have never heard of the National Security Agency, but it supervises nearly all military intelligence from all branches of the military, Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, so forth. So I got orders to go there. I flew back to Travis Air Force Base. I'm going to digress here a little bit, to Travis Air Force Base out in California. And on the plane back, I met a guy who was returning from the U.S. Army post in Korea. So we flew basically overnight and got to Travis in the morning. We did our processing, and it got to be about 1 o'clock. So one of us suggested we go to the NCO club and have a couple of drinks, and that sounded like a good deal. So we sat there and swapped tall tales and lies and everything else. And then one of us decided that it might be good to go downtown San Francisco, see if we could get in a dialogue with some of the hippies down there. Remember, this was 1968.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there was sort of an anti-war sentiment in
absolutely.
The United States, particularly in
yeah.
San Francisco.
That was the capital.
So we did. He and I went down to the area of San Francisco, and we went to one of the hippie bars. And I got to say, they were so nice. They saw two somewhat intoxicated military people. I mean, we were still in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Came in there, I don't want to argue the war with some hippies. That's okay. That's okay. We love you. That kind of stuff. And we stayed there for a little while, and finally we calmed down, I guess. And then we hailed a cab and asked him to take us to a nice medium bar so we could see some round-eyed women. In your interviews, you may have heard that before.
Round-eyed?
Round-eyed. Oriental women. They,
oh, no, you're the first to tell
okay.
me that, Les.
Okay, round-eyed. It was a phrase used. So we got a cab, and and told Gabby what we wanted, and he thought he was doing us a real favor, I guess, because we just told him we wanted to go to a nice bar. He took us to an Oriental bar, and this guy from the Army had just left Korea, and I just left Japan. We said, what the heck, our night is shot anyhow, so we went in there and talked with him, and happened to be a Japanese bar, so had a good time. Then I went home on leave, and then I went to Fort Meade, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And just to show you that sometimes the military doesn't know exactly what it's doing, they had a program that you could get out early if you were going to college. See, I'd extended for 3 months, kicked me from the end of July till the end of October. So I wrote a letter to Morehead State College. You had to have a letter of acceptance in order to get into this program. So I wrote a letter to Morehead State College at the time, asking if I could return for second summer session, which would have been middle of July. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I'd also been accepted out at Western Washington State in Bellingham, Washington. So I sent them a letter. I figured one of them was going to get back to me. And I said, the first one that gets it back to me, I'm going to turn that one in and apply for an early out. Well, Morehead replied about a day and a half or 2 days ahead of Bellingham, Washington, so I turned it in. And I actually got out on the 15th of July. Well, normally I would have gotten out on the 22nd of July, and I guess the rest is history. Mm-hmm. So me extending for 3 months actually allowed me to get out a week early. And the best part is I got to spend a couple of months out in Fort Meade, Maryland, and was able to go to Washington, D.C. and play tourist. And I don't know if there's a better place to be a tourist than mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. Especially if you had a history background and love that stuff. It's a great mm-hmm. place to go. Then I came back to Morehead State, enrolled in second summer session classes, as I had to, and then enrolled in fall. And people getting out of the military, at least back then, probably should not get out and go directly to college. They had to take a month and recover or relax or whatever you want to call it. So at the end of fall quarter, my mind was shot and so was I. So I took almost a year off. Took winter term, spring term, and summer off, and re-enrolled the following fall. And enrolled as a math major. Was on a college campus in from 68 till 72 as a student. Lots of interesting things going on in the country back then, including the Vietnam War, the Democratic Convention in Chicago, where they had riots and all sorts of things. Martin Luther King being shot, Bobby Kennedy being shot, George Wallace being shot. I actually heard George Wallace when I was at Fort Meade, Maryland. George Wallace was a bigot and a racist. And there was no doubt about it. And he was speaking at some place. So this other guy and I said, let's go listen to him. So we went down there to listen to him. And the guy was, he was what people said he was. Yeah. And that's the way he preached. And there was a big following that listened to him. We couldn't believe it. We sat there and shook our heads. There's no way. You can't be doing that. So
by 72, did you also have your master's degree?
No. I got my baccalaureate in 72.
Okay.
I got it in 1970. I was three classes short of a math degree when I took my first computer class. Mm-hmm. I'm still two classes short of a math degree. Computers were so interesting and so wonderful back in 1970 when I took mm-hmm. the first one. That's what I got my degree in 1972. And I was involved in various campus activities. I was with student advisors. I was in student government and a variety of other things. And through that, I was able to meet some folks. And there was a position open for well, they called it a veteran service officer. It was a counselor for the GI Bill for the veterans going to school. And Bob McLeod, who was then vice president of student affairs, told me about it and suggested I apply. I was on the student senate at the time, so, and he was the advisor. And I did, and was hired fall of 72 when I graduated. So I was the GI Bill counselor for my first 4 or 5 years. And we had, I think the highest we ever had was 580-some GI Bill students on campus. And I've done the GI Bill ever since. I've worked in a registrar's office as an assistant registrar for a while, and then in 1985, I think it was, I was appointed computer director mm-hmm. of the new computer center that was just formed back then. That's what I've been doing since.
Mm-hmm. And then, when was it that you obtained your master's degree?
Oh, yeah. That was about 1975 is when I got it, a master's degree in counseling. And
from MSU.
From MS, yep. And then I took about a third, I guess, of the MBA courses, Master's in Business Administration, I guess. In a supervisory position, you need to know that sort of stuff. Good for you to know.
Great. What are your thoughts about the war we're fighting now?
Talking about the war in Afghanistan, just in case people listening to this from 5-10 years from now don't know what war we're talking about. Is it appropriate? Sure it is. I think there's ample evidence that the Al-Qaeda group and bin Laden and his people were behind the terrorist attack on New York and the Pentagon. I think it's valid. But then I'm ex-military, and more ex-military people would say it's valid than social workers would, mm-hmm. for instance. Not picking on social workers, but slightly different background, different perspective and everything else.
Any final thoughts about your time in the military?
Greatest experience that any young man from Newfoundland could ever have had. As I've told other people, a mixed marriage in Newfoundland was one branch of a Lutheran church marrying another branch of the Lutheran church. Mm-hmm. Because we're all Scandinavian Lutherans up there, except for a few German Lutherans, but we were all the same. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt. We were all the same. Got to Goodfellow, or Lackland Air Force Base, basic training. We had a black man for a drill instructor. We had people from all over the country in our barracks. You were sleeping feet apart and everything else. And frankly, it didn't matter. And that was really good for anyone in a small town that's never had any exposure to anything to go through. The other thing really good about it is I found the education system in Newfoundland, if one were willing enough to work at it, was excellent. My math teacher, my high school math teacher, I still say was probably the best teacher I've had. And I remember coming home from college my freshman year at Christmas time, and she called and wanted me to come in to talk about what I was learning in math because she heard I was in calculus. And I found out she'd never even taken calculus. That was back when you only needed 2 years of college to teach. At the end of my freshman year, I knew more math than my high school math teacher. It was a real shock. But she taught us everything she knew. And you could tell by the way she was asking me questions is she wanted to know this so she could pass it on to her current mm-hmm. high school senior class. So that was really good. And going into the military, you find out that upper Midwest folks are very competitive, good backgrounds and everything else. And people are just people. They're good folks that come from New York and Los Angeles. They're jerks that come from New York and Los Angeles, just like they're out of Minnesota. Doesn't matter what color, what race, what gender. They're good folks. They're not so good folks.
Exactly. Les, how would you like to be remembered?
I knew you were going to ask that one. I got it ready.
That's good.
Yeah. That I made a difference. And working in a college environment, I think, is probably the best place where you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. As I tell other folks that ask, why do you like working there, I say, there is no place that I know of that every fall we get 2,000 new people that walk in the door and their objective is to learn something. they're great. I mean, they ask good questions. They may be the same questions that were asked last year, but they ask good questions. They think. They don't come around and say, well, we've never done it that way before. We couldn't possibly change to that method. They're open. They're willing. Great environment.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You bet.